Boing Linux, episode 246, Computer America, number 74. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy. Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux. We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host,
Craig Buffett.
Craig, there's something on the wing. There's something.
It's Captain Kirk.
Yeah, it's just the way you were pausing. I was like, why is he pausing like that?
Because I thought you were doing drummers, because when I was talking, then you go, and I think we're keeping rhythm.
And in the words of Jonathan, or was it Jonathan? Was it? Yes, it was Jonathan. It is me, the man, the myth, the ethical hacker, Charles Sandell.
Hey, Charles, welcome back.
Hello.
Yeah, what happened? We missed you yesterday.
Well, I had a setup meeting go long, but, you know, it always gets you. This is what a lot of people don't realize. When you sit in the big chair, when things go wrong and errors, you know, engulf certain projects, you must take the lead and solve the world's issues, kind of like we're going to do in Iraq, which is so stupid. That's a different show altogether.
You couldn't turn it over to Ensign Chekhov or something to do it while you're away?
No. Chekhov! Get us out of here, Chekhov!
Exactly. Check it off your list. Exactly.
Check it off. Checked off.
Checked off. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Checked off.
I'm really checked off.
Okay. I'm checked off. Hey, you better be careful. You're going to end up like that woman with a thing on the back seat of her car.
No. hopefully not. But in your case,
you can blame it on the dogs.
Yes. Welcome into the Tuesday edition. And as I said, it's the third Tuesday of the month. That means it's time for our All Linux Show. Right. Everything you want to know about Linux and more. Now, joining us here to help us in this endeavor, talking about Linux, you know, because it is an important operating system. And
it's the only operating system. Everybody else wishes they were as cool as Linux.
Yes, well, joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Hey, Larry, welcome to Computer America. How are you?
Doing great. Just laughing and chuckling along with the chat room, and looking forward to another great show.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Great show. I think you're in the wrong place, Larry. The great show is down the hall.
See you later, guys.
Oh, that hurt. You wounded me. That's terrible.
No, this is the Computer America show. Yeah. There's one called The Great Show.
Uh-huh. The Great Show.
There are clowns and animals.
The circus, in other words. Okay. Well, we're going to be talking about Linux tonight, and what we usually do, I'm going to kind of set this up for those who might not be familiar with our program.
I can help with that one. Oh.
No, stop that.
Oh.
what we do is we ask Larry to pick a topic each month to talk about regarding Linux. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to talk only about that. That's going to be the underlying theme. But if you have a question or a comment or whatever about Linux, we certainly would love to hear from you, and we have open phones for that. You can call us at 347-884-8881. 347-884-8881 will get you on and get you through. Okay. You can also send us email, live, L-I-V-E, at computeramerica.com. You can also join us in our live interactive add-on chat room from our homepage at computeramerica.com. Under the first pull-down menu, you'll see chat room / video. There's also a button that says chat room / video on our homepage. Either way, just click it or select it, and you'll see our chat room. All you have to do is it'll ask you for a username. That's the name you'll be known by when you go in there. Click the sign-in button, and your Java-enabled browser on a, and that doesn't mean Mac, Linux, they all work, move you into the Computer America chat room. The other thing, sharing that very same page, is our live video stream. So that's another way you can watch a show. You can watch it there on a live computer video streaming page. The topic that Larry has selected for this month's show on Linux is 10 things to do after installing Linux Mint 17. Now, here's the thing. If you want to, you can also follow along with us, what we're going to be talking about. If you go to our show notes page, go to our homepage again at computeramerica.com and go to the show notes page and then click on the click here to read the show notes. You'll see today's show, which is the June the 17th, and you'll see it's all about Linux. We even have a link to the Going Linux podcast there, but you'll see two other links below that. One is the show notes, and the other one is the show emails that we get. In the first hour, we're going to do this topic that we just talked about. It's going to be there. It'll open up a Google Docs document so that you can read and follow along with
easy
it.
Easy for you to say.
Yes, it is. And, of course, in hour two, you can click on the email, and the old emails page. You can read all of the emails that we're going to be talking about. But you know, go to the show notes page. Go and check out the Computer America show notes, and you'll read the for Linux, and you can see all – he has links in there, images that you can look at, which is really nice. So it just makes the listening experience even a more – homogenized experience, so you can see what it is that we're talking about. So let's get started. And again, the topic again is 10 things to do after installing Linux Mint 17. And I guess it would open up by saying I didn't know there were 17 things that you could do. But yeah, I think once you have Linux Mint, that's it. You know, you're done. But no, evidently.
Well, and
close.
Yeah. It's not inconceivable that you could install Linux Mint 17 and never have to do anything else but use it.
Mm-hmm.
However, we are Linux users, and that would just be a waste of time.
Because nothing would be a waste of time?
Yeah, I mean, doing nothing would be a waste of time, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the reasons you have Linux, is so you can tinker with it, right?
So what you're telling me, Larry, is that finding a Linux distribution that is out of the box perfect and pretty much close to perfect, like Linux Mint, you know, a Linux user would be like, what, perfect, out of the box? Who do you think we are?
Why would we want to use that? Yes, exactly right. So for those people who want to use a Mac but find themselves on Linux, Linux Mint is not exactly – doesn't exactly look like the OS X interface, but it works just as well out of the box. So you don't have to do anything with it. However, for those of us who are your typical Linux tinkerers, we have 10 things to do after installing Linux Mint.
By the way, Addison in the chat room says one thing about Linux Mint 17 is that it has a lot of updates, sometimes several times a day. Really?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I've noticed that as well. I'm not sure why they do that. It seems like they do it more regularly right after the release. So I'm thinking that it may be that the users, once they start using it as their regular production environment, start finding niggly little things that need to be fixed, and they just go in and apply all those fixes, develop the fixes, and apply them in the next patch, which, unlike a Redmond-based company that develops operating systems, Linux doesn't wait until, you know, the second Tuesday of the month to send out those patches. Mm-hmm. They just send them out as soon as they're ready to go, and they have 12 today and one tomorrow. They'll send you 12 today and one tomorrow. That's kind of par for the course with most of the Linux distributions. Right after their release, they'll send out a flurry of patches.
Okay.
I see you've got a battle buddy now, Larry.
A battle buddy?
Yeah, you got your buddy there hanging out over your right shoulder. I think I see Tux.
Yes, you do. Let me move just a little bit more.
Tux!
Yeah, so there's Tux.
Well, the The other thing about it is isn't 17? 17 is the LTS release of Mint, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Oh.
So they want to make sure that it's nice and stable. And it's based on the long-term support, LTS's long-term support. So they want to make sure that it's nice and stable for folks. It's based on the long-term support.
I know. Thanks for pointing it out, Joe. Yeah.
You forget I can see you now.
Yes.
Yay, yes.
Go ahead.
I've
had like 3 hours of sleep, so I'm sorry. It's been a long day. Yes, exactly. Go ahead.
So you slept in. Long-term support. Linux Mint 17 is based on Ubuntu, another Linux distribution, which also has its long-term support release that it came out with earlier this year. This version of Mint is based on that long-term support release of Ubuntu, and in turn, it's a long-term support release, which means that it will be supported with security patches and updates, and that's updates for both the operating system and the applications until 2019. So that is truly long-term support. And even after this version of Linux Mint comes out, there will be, it appears that they're going to bring out point releases like 17.1, 17.2, between now and I think it's 2016 when Mint will come out,
if I read that correctly. That is genuinely my only problem with Linux is, you know, it's the new cutting edge, bleeding edge stuff comes out in the form of nightly builds or the point releases. And, you know, you could very easily go, you know, it's Mint 17. And then it's like by 7 days after release, it's Mint 17.7. And you're like, seriously, guys, I don't need that kind of far bleeding edge. Just give me something that's stable and works for an extended period of time that I don't have to worry about. That's got a lot of the main features, you know? I mean,
well, and that's the purpose of the long-term support release, as you know, is that they'll provide patches and updates. And if they're security patches especially, they'll get them out right away. And any updates that are necessary to fix issues that have come up either through users reporting them or through developers making a mistake on their application, they'll send those out as well through the life of the operating system. But with a long-term support release, they're going to leave the basic foundation of
alone.
The operating system alone. And even the applications, they'll continue to update the applications as new releases of those come out. So you get your Chrome updates and your Firefox updates and your word processor updates and your text editor updates or whatever you use. And those will all come in.
What's the matter, Larry?
There's something floating by the front of your camera there. It looked like a starship to me. There you go.
I can.
Oh, for our audio-only listeners, you're missing out.
Yeah, really. The live streaming video, you should check it out. Mm-hmm.
Distractions galore. Mm. So with the topic tonight being 10 things to do after you install Linux Mint 17, certainly, if you want stability, you don't have to do any of these. If you don't want to tinker with your operating system, you don't have to.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the SF hairbrush.
Okay. Three can play at this game. Here we go.
Wait, he's got a remote control. Come on. Mine was still cooler.
Whatever is
around,
I'll get talks in a minute. But anyway, for those audio listeners, we're lifting stuff up in front of the cameras and being sort of childish adolescents here. But
being a trendsetter.
Yes. I'm sorry. I mentioned I haven't had sleep for about 3 hours. I get loopy. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Larry. Go on.
Yeah, that's all right. I think we have a show to do here, guys. I don't know.
Maybe.
We could always talk about something else. I don't know.
No, let's continue on.
Yeah, so Fort just noticed I have a penguin on the desk behind me.
Right.
Anyway,
And I have a cheeseburger in mine, so go ahead.
Yes, there you go. Oh, by the way, I have a list of 10 things you can do, but Inet Ken in the chat sent me by email a link, and it's in our show notes links, mm-hmm. to an article. I posted my article on the Going Linux website, mm-hmm. 10 things to do after installing Linux Mint 17, on the, let me check here, the June the 9th.
No.
And on June the 15th. There was an article written by Binary Tides, 20 things to do after installing Linux Mint.
They did 10 more? You did.
10 more. Well,
were any of the 10 appeared on your initial 10 list?
Some of them were the same, yeah. Not all 10 of them.
You think they
and
read
there
your,
are some things that I would never do, but you, they recommend doing.
You think they read your story? You think they read your story and plagiarized?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I don't think so.
Okay. Yours came out. Theirs came out after yours, though, right?
Yes, yes it did.
Mm.
Okay. I might have used the same research.
Maybe.
Maybe. Anyway, we'll go through my 10 things, and then if we have time, we'll take a look at their 20 and see if there's anything interesting on it. How about that?
Okay. Well, the 10 that were on yours are interesting. I don't know about the other.
No, I thought they were. Yeah.
Exactly.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. So we talked about the fact that long-term support is this version of
2019
long-term support, and it's supported till 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be giving you the ability to do upgrades in place on Linux Mint between now and then.
What do you mean by in place? What do you mean by in place upgrades?
In place upgrades. So that's something that Ubuntu has done. With varying degrees of success, depending on which release it is, where you can simply click an update on the software updater, and it updates not just your applications and security patches, but when the new version of the release, let's say it's Ubuntu, 14.04, mm-hmm. and they release 14.10, mm-hmm. which is the next one after that, you click the update, and it completely upgrades you to the next version.
Uh-huh.
On the Mac, it would be like upgrading from
Lion Mavericks to Mountain Lion.
To whatever the next one is. I've forgotten the name of
yes,
it already.
Yosemite.
Maybe forget.
Yep.
Yeah, both of you guys know it.
Yosemite.
But it's like doing that right in place without having to do anything further.
Hmm.
You don't have to download it or anything. You just click the update button and it upgrades you. So Ubuntu's been doing that for a number of years. Linux Mint had that capability. It was a little more than just clicking a button, but they didn't really recommend it because they made some significant changes from release to release that they really didn't want you to do the in-place upgrades. So they recommended that you uninstall, well, not really uninstall, you just install
backup,
the new version.
Wipe, install.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you back up all your data and then you reinstall over top of the old installation. Mm-hmm. So a fresh install, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with this new philosophy they have that started with Linux Mint 17, they will have in-place upgrades to the interim versions between major versions, between the long-term support releases. And so they're going to be supporting that. And the reason they are able to do that now, and they didn't feel they were able to do it before, at least in part, is due to the fact that all of the upgrades between Mint 17 and the next long-term support release will be based on the same version of Ubuntu, the long-term support version of Ubuntu. That has not been the case between those interim releases of Linux Mint in between.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and I think we covered that last time around before, you know, on our last month's episode as well. Yeah, your mic is still on. There we go. Okay, so let's see. Ubuntu is certainly better known than Linux Mint in terms of the fact that I think there are more users out there of Linux who are aware of it and users out there of Windows and Mac that are aware that there is a version of Linux out there called Ubuntu. And I think it's mainly because of the fact that Ubuntu has Canonical's advertising budget behind it. And Linux Mint does not have an advertising budget behind it, or if it does, it has a very small advertising budget. But Mint has been described as Ubuntu done right. And the reason for that is because Mint comes pre-installed with what most switchers and cross-platform users will want. They install all the audio codecs that you might use, like MP3, so that you can play MP3 audio, which Ubuntu doesn't install out of the box unless you choose to install it during the installation process. But you have to do that as an extra step.
They
offer it now right up front. Yeah.
In Ubuntu proper, you can actually check the radio, the little tick box that says, you know, install third-party applications and
right.
all that other stuff now.
But who knows that means you can't play MP3s until you actually do that. And then if you don't choose that, you can't play your MP3 player, it'll pop up a little box and say, do you want to install something that'll allow you to play this? That's fine, but Mint comes all pre-installed with all of that stuff, and that's what makes it just work right out of the box for most people. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, that's what most people want. So even though it is right for most people, there are some things that you might want to do after installing it. And so one of the things that I'm going to recommend is that before you invest the time installing your favorite applications and copying your video collection to the home partition and changing the themes to match the color of blue on your keyboard's function keys, and for veteran users, tweaking your conky script to reflect the names of the network drivers that were given this time you installed the operating system, you might want to make the tweaks that we recommend here just to make sure that things are all functional properly before you go and make all those cosmetic changes.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we're going to use Linux Mint 17 for these examples because that's what this is all about. So getting into our top 10 list, our 10 things, and the bottom 10 will be from that other list of 20 things. Okay, whatever they are. So the first thing is apply the updates. So there will be updates. Even after installing it fresh, because the image that they made for the installation has been out for, 2 weeks now? So you know there are going to be updates out there. After installing any operating system, there are updates.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're following along in the show notes, you can see this time around I have some very interesting graphics to share with you.
A little eye.
Let's see if I can do the screen share thing. Okay, so there, you should be looking at the browser.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little shield here with an eye with a little, it's a little blue circle with an eye in it. So that's the first thing to do is apply the updates. And you want to make sure those are applied first because anything else you do may be affected by those updates, so you want to make sure that they're applied first.
Okay.
Oh, that kind of makes sense. The next thing is check the device drivers. Now, Mint does a really good job of detecting device drivers and applying the right drivers, and Linux, unlike most other operating systems, has the drivers in the kernel, and so they're not really, you really don't need to install drivers separately, typically.
Mm-hmm.
However, on rare occasions, things don't get installed properly. Either the operating system didn't recognize the device properly and didn't install the right driver, or perhaps there's a better driver out there than the one that was installed. By default, most Linux distributions are going to try to install open source drivers first, and if you find that your device doesn't work with the open source driver, or if you find that the driver that Linux has picked for you isn't working the way you want it to work, or maybe there's some features missing that the open source driver doesn't have that a proprietary driver from the device manufacturer might have, then you might want to look for those device drivers. Unlike on other operating systems from Redmond-based companies, not mentioning Windows by name, on Linux Mint at least, when you go into the system settings, there is a little icon that you can click on called device drivers. And what that does is it goes to see if there are any proprietary drivers for the devices that you have. And again, I'm going to share the screen here for those people who are not looking at the show notes, but are looking at the Google Hangouts video. You'll see here that there's a screenshot of that driver manager, and this is taken from my computer, and so it recognizes here that there I have an AMD Advanced Micro Devices HD display, and that it's using the built-in ATI driver on Linux, and playing it using XOR. There are two other drivers available, and I could choose either of those two. The one that I'm using is actually the one that's recommended, so that's fine. And I took this screenshot right after installing Linux Mint 17. So although I do have a Broadcom wireless card, and the Broadcom driver, the proprietary driver, was not installed by default. It was using this BCMWL kernel source driver, which is an open source version of a driver for a Broadcom device. That device worked just fine, or rather the Broadcom wireless card worked just fine on the open source driver. I decided to use the Broadcom proprietary driver for one reason, and that is that on the open source driver, the little light on the key that tells me that my wireless device is connected by showing a white LED, and when it's disconnected, shows an amber LED. Using the open source driver, it always showed the amber LED, so I couldn't really tell whether it was connected or not looking at the keyboard. So the only reason I'm using the proprietary driver is to get that LED to work properly. Fix it, guys. Fix it, please. Anyway.
How, you know, other than it being an indicator, the LED doesn't tell you anything more?
No, that's it. That's all it does. And I'm a bit of a shitty son of a gun.
Okay.
So I want it to work right,
and it didn't.
Right. So I used the proprietary driver.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, there was no other performance improvement or anything when I switched drivers, and it's been that way for a while, and I just switch it. No big deal. I'm a pragmatist. Mm-hmm. I use what works.
Okay.
So getting back to our list here. Let me get back to goodbye screen share. Okay, so the latest version of Ubuntu and derivatives like Linux Mint may have issues with Broadcom drivers and the operating system not recognizing the Broadcom chip correctly.
Right.
Although mine is a BCM4313 device, there are other models. And so you might want to check the show notes for a fix for Broadcom in the show notes.
All right. We're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a little break, and we'll continue on. It's our All Linux Show with Larry Bushy. We'll continue on with this topic right after this.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. We're 33 minutes after the hour in the first hour. It is me and Larry are looking at Craig's smile. Do it again, Craig. Do it again. He's like, what?
He's a lot more animated than he was last month.
Yeah, I was just kind of a little blur.
A static picture.
That was a blur.
Was that, Craig, now he's got his camera up there. He's getting back into the style. He's getting back to the swing of things of being an entertainer and being, you know, watched by millions of people. Yeah, so he's having fun. Me, Craig, and Larry are talking about the 10 plus 10 more things that you should do immediately after installing Linux Mint 17. If you guys want to get in on the conversation, you got a call, you got a question, you want to harass me, Craig, or Larry, give us a call, 347-884-8881. That number again, 347-884-8881. I'll get you on and get you through. Or join us over at ComputerAmerica.com in our live interactive add-on chat room, right above which is our live video where you can see me in my Beast Mode t-shirt.
Yes, I was wondering what that was.
It says Beast Mode on.
Beast mode on. Okay.
So those of you who are old school gamers, you understand what beast mode is. Or if you're a Marvel comic, is it Marvel or DC Comics? Whichever one.
Don't get them mixed up. You'll get hate mail.
Yes, you'll get
hate mail. If you're in the Marvel DC comic crazy world, and if you need to send hate mail, send it to Craig @computeramerica.com.
Mm-hmm. You can send it to Larry @computeramerica.com, and it'll go into the bit bucket.
It might work.
Yeah.
There you go.
I like the bit.
Actually, anything at computeramerica.com comes to me. So.
Oh, well.
Because I own the domain.
Anything at computeramerica.com.
So if you want to send us an email to anything.
And then I forward it to Charles. Then it gets forwarded to Charles.
Go ahead, Trey.
And then it gets forwarded to Charles. Go ahead.
No forwarding it to Charles. Rude.
All right. Well, I just wanted to say that Addison in the chat had said that the best thing about Linux Mint 17 is its 10 things to do after install is a lot different from other distros because Mint 17 has a lot of things pre-installed.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have gotten to number 2 on our list. We covered apply the updates and check the device drivers. And the next thing on the list is install your applet extensions and assistive technology. What the heck is all that stuff? Mm. Well, the applets are the things that are sitting on your panel or your taskbar, as Windows would call it. So these are the little indicators that tell you things about your computer or about the applications that are running, and there is a whole host of them available for Linux Mint, especially if you're using the Cinnamon edition. And so there's a lot that you can install there. I'm not going to go through the whole list, or we'll be talking about the 100 million applets that you can install on Linux Mint 17 after installing it. So we'll not talk about that. But if you're interested, go in and take a look at what is available, which of course means you have to try out Linux Mint. See my ulterior motive here. The other thing is extensions. So extensions are things that make your computer work a little bit better. So on the Mint Cinnamon Edition, you can install things like a Zoom tool or new themes themes come out under themes, not under extensions. But there are a number of different things that you can install there. And assistive technology might be, a screen magnifier or something like that.
Maybe you have a handicap or an impairment of some sort and they have...
So if any of those, this is the time to install those right after getting your drivers up to date.
Right.
Okay, the next thing would be to personalize the trackpad and mouse settings. So in Linux Mint on the Cinnamon Edition, actually it's probably there on all of the editions, if you go to the System Settings panel, you can then choose an icon that says mouse and touchpad. And on that icon, once you click on that, it'll bring up another panel that lets you make the setting changes. Two tabs, and a touchpad tab. Both of those have a vast array of settings that you can make. And make changes to. Let me find them on my list of things to share with you here. So here we go. These are the mouse settings on Linux Mint with the Cinnamon desktop. And so you can see that if you're left-handed and you like to use the right mouse button for the primary click, you can switch this to a left-handed mouse. You can show the position of the pointer when the control key is pressed. Let's see if I can. I don't have the settings set here, so I can't show you that right now. But essentially, it makes a little green by default.
Larry.
Yes, sir.
Did you just try and click your screenshot?
I did. Because I have it 100% of the. Yes. Yes,
you tried to click the screenshot, ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching the live. He was like, let me see if I can turn this. Wait, no.
There. Can you see that? Can you see the little green flickery thing there?
I see no green screen flickery thing.
Oh, maybe it doesn't show up in Hangouts. Okay.
It may not.
No, I didn't. It just didn't work, Charles. I didn't actually try to the screenshot.
Okay.
It just didn't work there. That's what it was. Yeah. Okay. So the other thing you can do is emulate a middle click by clicking both the left and the right mouse button. So if you have a mouse that only has two buttons, what are you doing? So that scroll wheel in the middle, that can be a button on most mices. And if you don't have a middle button, you can set it up so that when you make this selection here, emulate middle click by clicking both left and right buttons. If you hit them both at the same time, that's the same as doing a middle click. Why do you want to use a middle click? Well, you can program that middle click to do a lot of different things. And I'm not going to go into those, or we'll be talking about what can you do with your middle click.
Mm-hmm.
No, don't go there, guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Pointer size. Talk about don't go there. So this is the cursor on the screen, and apparently size does matter, so you can adjust the size here. Pointer speed, acceleration, and sensitivity. So these are very common settings, and so if you're a Windows user or a Mac user, you have similar sorts of settings. If you're a Linux user who uses KDE, this is a small fraction of the settings that you may have available to you at any time in any window at any place and time of your choosing. About the only one here who got that one was Charles.
KDE.
And okay. And let's see, drop and drag. You can,
everything, is that what it was meant for?
Yeah, yeah. In case, this is a small fraction of the settings that would be available on KDE, is the point I was making. And then on the mouse, or rather on the touchpad settings, you can enable or disable your touchpad. And this is assuming your computer has a touchpad. If it doesn't have a touchpad, this tab won't even show up.
Now, have they made it a standard feature, the mouse detection? I know, I don't know if in Ubuntu you actually have to install the additional GNOME trackpad config, whatever it is. But I think in Linux Mint years ago, or last one I saw, if you plugged in a USB mouse or keyboard, it would automatically detect that and turn off your trackpad. Does it still do that?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, because I always have mine turned on, even with the external keyboard and mouse connected. But enabling or disabling is just checking or unchecking this box. So even if it doesn't do it automatically, it's a single click. And this disable touchpad while typing is a useful feature if you're using the keyboard on your laptop and it happens to be behind the touchpad and your palms keep resting on the touchpad while you're typing and your mouse moves all over the place. Very handy. Enable mouse click with the touchpad. So you can actually, depending on the trackpad that you have or the touchpad that you have, you may have one of those like on a Mac that actually presses down to initiate a click. Mine on my HP DM4 does that and does that by default. And when I installed Linux Mint 17, this was unchecked. I like just being able to touch the touchpad to have it click the mouse button.
Yeah.
So I enabled that, and that works fine. Now, two-finger scrolling, so that emulates what you might do on a Mac, or you can have single finger scrolling on the side of the touchpad. That's another option for you. And enable natural scrolling, that is the upside-down scrolling that the Mac uses.
Yeah,
unnatural.
Yes, the unnatural natural scrolling. And the enable horizontal scrolling, I don't use that, so I don't have it enabled. And you can adjust the speed. So there's lots of different settings that you can have on that for mouse and touchpad. I haven't seen Craig yawning lately, so maybe it's still interesting. Okay.
I'm asleep.
Craig sleeps with his eyes open. Is that what you're saying?
That's what he's saying.
He does, man. He's a radio combat veteran.
There you go.
He can do the entire show while sleepwalking.
Oh,
I can tell Craig is tired, but I
Yeah.
You can tell he's awake because he was smiling. There we go. All right.
I have that frozen picture of me just smiling.
if you hear him snoring, you can be like,
yeah.
Yeah. No, it won't happen. Not in 25 years. All right, go ahead.
Don't snore?
No. I haven't fallen asleep on the air yet.
Okay. I'll just put that as a challenge.
There's always a first time, right?
Go to sleep.
I don't think so.
Your eyes are getting heavy.
Oh, man. Uh-huh. The audio listeners aren't going to be listening very closely to this one, I'll tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right, the next one, point number five, we're only halfway through our list here, guys. Point number five is personalize the update manager. Here's a new feature in Linux Mint 17, and we are going to share this one again. Mm-hmm. So I may as well just leave this shared, I think, is probably what I should do.
Click.
Click. There we go. So in the preferences, you can go to system settings to adjust this in the update manager. You have several settings here that you can fiddle with if you like, but there are several levels of updates that you can get from Linux Mint. Unlike Ubuntu that doesn't rate their updates in this way, Mint has taken the time to classify each update as to whether it's a certified package that has gone through the Linux Mint testing grounds, or it's a recommended package that also has been tested. That's level two, the previous one being level one. Level three is generally something that's safe. It's not tested by the Linux Mint people, and usually that's because it's an update that's come downstream from Ubuntu, and they're trusting that the Ubuntu folks have tested it. They believe it to be safe. They have, maybe they've had somebody run it a little bit, but it hasn't gone through the exhaustive testing. Mm-hmm. Then level four is something that's known to be unsafe. Why would you want to install something that's unsafe on your computer? Well, you might need something that's a little cutting edge or bleeding edge. Well, this would be
the
cutting
version
edge
of Wine. Yeah.
Yes. So level four, the unsafe, would be the cutting edge. The level five, that would be the bleeding edge, which is why it's colored red. These are dangerous package, known to affect the stability of the systems depending on certain specs or hardware. In other words, don't install these unless you know what you're doing.
And these are packages that you have to compile yourself. So if you're that advanced, go for it.
Go for it. Yes. There you go. And you have additional settings so that when you receive the notification that you have updates, you can choose to show the security updates every time or hide them. And you can choose to always select and trust security updates. So when you get a notification from the Linux Mint folks, you'll get a notification of all of the settings that you have checked over here that you want, and the ones that will be checked by default are the 1, 2, and sometimes the 3, depending on what your settings are set at. But if you check this little box here that says always select and trust security updates, regardless of what those security updates are, it will select them so that they will be installed for you if you just click the update manager and click install without thinking about it. So it's up to you.
Regardless of the risk level assigned by the package manager, they'll be installed regardless.
Yes, every single security update will be updated. Yeah, it will be applied.
All right.
Okay. All right. Next, personalize the file manager. The file manager in Linux Mint is called Nemo.
Nemo!
Nemo!
Having trouble finding it.
The fish, either the fish Nemo, it's either
problems finding.
It's either after the fish, or wasn't Nemo Captain the
Captain Nemo,
the Captain of the Nautilus, right?
Underneath
the
Captain of the Nautilus,
and the previous file manager was
Nautilus.
Yes. So now you figured it out. I don't like the black and red stripes in the background, but that's a different story. So Nemo is the file manager, and there are a number of things that you can do there. You can choose how many columns are displayed and what kind of information is displayed in the file manager. But the thing that I noticed changed in Mint 17 that you might want to change back to the way it used to work is the previews on files. In other words, when you receive an audio file, like an MP3 file with ID3 tags, or if you have a video file that shows a preview in the file manager.
Oh, that was a great preview.
In previous versions, you could see a preview of whatever file was there, regardless of its size, which could affect the performance if you have some very large files, could affect the performance of the screen refresh when opening a folder containing a lot of huge multi-megabyte files. So I think what they've done is they've reduced this down. I don't remember what the setting was before I changed it, but all my video and audio files that I need to see previews of are under 100 megabytes, but it was set to below this. I don't remember what it was by default. So I had to switch this, and this works for me. You might want to look at it too if you're used to seeing those previews.
Okay.
Next is so after you've installed it, after you've made all of these updates and tweaks, then you want to copy all of your home directory files from your backup. Remember, you made a backup, right, before you installed this? Okay, good. So you take all of those files, photos and audio files and back episodes of Computer America that you've on your hard drive, you move all those over. And remember the hidden folders, because if you don't remember the hidden folders, you're not going to get all of the application settings. That's where they're stored. So you want to make sure all those go over.
All the utilitarian functions.
Exactly. You did back those up, didn't you?
Yes.
Good. Okay.
Oh, God.
Then you can install your favorite applications. So we have a link in the show notes to installing apps, and it's a link to an episode of the Going Linux podcast, strangely enough, episode 245, where we had discussed a command line command that gives you a list of everything that you have installed on your computer. So you run that before you do your installation to figure out what you've got installed, and then after you've installed the new version of Linux Mint, we'll give you a command to run to install all of those applications back on your new installation. So if you've got a whole list of things that you don't remember where they came from, you don't know how you got them, if they're in the repositories, this command will reinstall them from wherever they're available. As long as you have a connection to that in your repositories. You know, if you added a personal package archive, also known as PPA, you'll need to add that first, but I'm assuming you know you did that in the first place, but maybe not if you don't remember where you got a lot of these applications. Second last one from us is, if you have an SSD drive, a solid state drive, we have some tips on optimizing Linux for use with your SSD drive. Linux Mint does a pretty good job of setting up for things like let me go to my link here on SSD drives. Nope, not that one. This one here. Trim, that's what I'm thinking about. Linux Mint does a good job of looking at and setting up trim by default. But some of the other settings for SSD drives, you might want to optimize a little more than it comes out of the box. And so we have some specific suggestions as to what you can do to help with that. And last but not least, number 10, install your theme and your other personalization tweaks. So that's kind of the 10 things to do in the order after you've installed Linux Mint 17 from the CD or the thumb drive or whatever it is you used. Now let's see. How's our time? We got about 5 minutes. We can take a look through the 20 things to do after installing Linux Mint. Yeah, let's see what we've got. So update the system.
Wait, Larry, which desktop manager are you using? Are you using Cinnamon or Mate?
I am using Cinnamon.
And is there any particular reason you chose Cinnamon over me?
I like the fact that it's a little bit more personalizable.
Wait, what?
What?
What did you
did you say you choose? Why did you choose Cinnamon over me? Is what you said?
No,
mate. It sounds like you. Why did you choose Cinnamon over me? And I'm like, well,
why did you choose Cinnamon over me, Larry? You don't love me anymore.
Oh God!
This show went downhill from before the.
So I'm
back and on air.
The reason I'm asking, is I haven't run Mint in a long time, and I'm a distro hopper, but I've got my new MacBook Pro, and it's been serving me well running OS X.
10.
Darn. But it's been serving me well running OS X, and I've fallen back 10. To my command line stuff. I don't know, Craig, but the my biggest issue with it all was like Mac lacks a serious open terminal here. And I remember that was a staple in Linux Mint, and that's been like the first thing I install in Ubuntu. And I am so familiar and so comfortable with Ubuntu that it's gotten kind of weird me getting back used to Mac. And I mean, like, if you look at it, my dock is on the left, Ubuntu, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm debating, and I know there's a long, drawn-out process for installing it on Mac hardware, but I've got VirtualBox, and I was going to go to town with putting it in a virtual machine, and I just wanted somebody else's opinion. Which one should I put in there and see what?
Yeah, well, Mate is a lot like GNOME 2. So if you GNOME 2, you'll like Mate. If you like something with a little more tweakability, something that has a little more modern theme to it out of the box, and has quite a few more themes, then Cinnamon is for you. It has the applets and the themes and the extensions that you can get for it. And I don't know whether it shows up when I do the screen sharing, the window decorations here, but I have, let me go back to, which window is it? This one, I think. There we go. Does it show the screen decorations, the title bar up here with the buttons?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Wait, so you'll see that the button up here is the green X instead of the red X that or the sort of rust colored X that comes on this theme with Ubuntu out of the box.
Wow.
And so this is not the standard Mint setting here. Mint has more of an OS X look. Brushed metal with the buttons over on the right-hand side where Windows users say they should be. And I put them over here because that's where I like them. And I picked a theme that was similar to the Ubuntu theme, but because it's Mint, I wanted it to be green. So
Minty. See, I mean, and you're running this on an HP, you said?
Yes. So it's an HP 14-inch laptop. It's about 3 years old now, I think.
KY Engineer says he has Linux running on his Raspberry Pi.
Oh, yeah. I run Linux on a Raspberry Pi. And for those of you who don't know what a Raspberry Pi, it fits in an Altoid box, and it's a full computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And, they have another small version computer that is like that. They call it the Banana Cream Pi. Serious. It costs more money and it has a more powerful processor and better graphics and all the other stuff. And it's a little bit bigger too.
Is it from the same company?
We're building,
is it from the same company? Is it from the same company?
It is not.
Okay. Hey.
Well, it's actually hilarious though. I mean, if we flash back to the days of computer past, to when, you know, home computers were the tinkerer's thing where you would go, they'd buy a kit, they'd build it, they'd do all other stuff, and they'd, you know, soldering things to circuit boards, and all they could do was play Pong, you know. Now we fast forward and we've got Raspberry Pi where it is people are building these micro custom computers to do all sorts of things, and it's literally, it fits in an Altoid box. It's tiny. You know, it's just a good throwback version, you know. It's a good way of saying, you know, even though we're cool, we were able to go back in time and do cool
things. But the monitor and the keyboard won't fit in the Altoid box.
Actually, they've got that new 3D projector they're building into some of the new phones.
Hey,
you,
well,
you could probably have a plane break for it.
When we come back, we're going to switch gears, and we're going to go to the email portion of our show at Computer America. And Larry Bushy, yeah, is continuing on with us. We're going to have another news tip bulletin from Marty Weston about Microsoft 365 in the cloud. That's going to be interesting. You're listening to the Computer America Show. We'll be right back.
ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us or send us an email to live at ComputerAmerica.com.
Hello and
welcome
into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. I have my mute button pressed. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host,
the great and powerful Craig Crossman.
And ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for the interruption there. Some guy took over the broadcast and claimed he was the host. So welcome back into hour two, the nation's longest-running nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers and technology. And I'm your host, certified ethical hacker Charles Tendo, with my co-host, and going on the podcast sitting awfully still,
Larry Bushy.
Uh-oh.
Instant promotion. Hostile takeover, Larry. Go.
Go. Goodbye, Craig.
Okay.
Okay, so we're back.
You can't lose Craig.
No.
Craig is going to have to stay on. Craig is going to actually help me produce my show called, you know, the Life and Times of Charles.
By the way, I showed the guys. Just to take a brief departure here for a moment, as most of you know, that I'm waiting for the Apple iWatch to appear, and I've been holding out as I flushed my watch down the toilet accidentally to this day.
That's why you made us listen to that skit.
Anyway, I've been holding out, and I finally realized that I already have a watch that is. That I had when I want to do black tie events and stuff. It was very fly. But I figured, you know, it's just sitting in the box. Let me put a battery in it and get it started up. I had a battery placed. I was pleasantly surprised because I hadn't remembered it was a digital display. So this is the watch that I'm wearing now, and I'll hold it up to the camera so you can see it.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Craig Crossman is holding up a black and shiny, looks like one of those spring band watches.
Yeah, it's high-tech ceramic. It's a Rada watch, and it has a digital display underneath it, so it's really nice. And so I put a battery in it, and it's working. So I'm going to wear this until I see the iWatch coming from that. So at least I have my watch again. There you go. And, you know, it's nice. There it is.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, we're back into hour two of the show, and Larry Bushy is continuing on with us. And, of course, you can follow along with us. Just go to our show notes page at ComputerAmerica.com, and you'll see the today's show, the 17th of June. And it's the second link now. And at first we had our show notes for our Linux show here. And then the other one is our show emails. So click on that. You'll be able to see the emails as we read them and move through. And again, if you want the call or question, we'll stop what we're doing and we'll entertain your calls. 347-884-8881. We'll get you on and get you through. Starting off now with John in Dallas. He actually has a comment about installing Linux on an older Dell computer.
Oh, yes, he does.
Yes.
John wrote in, "Hey, Larry and Bill." Bill's my co-host, of course. Here's a great topic for a show. Trying to install any Linux into an old Dell laptop that's not PAE compatible.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that was my job last week. A Dell 8600, 10 years old, and XP Pro was so corrupted it would not boot. DLL. Can we say heck on the air?
Yes, you can say hell. You can't say heck, but you can say hell.
Therefore, Ubuntu and Mint to the rescue. But being a Pentium M and not a PAE, which stands for physical address extension, Thanks, John, for including that in the email. Mm-hmm. Nothing would install. Finally, found Mint, LMDE,
Lemonade.
The Linux Mint Debian edition, and did install. It did install, and it runs okay. Slow, only 512 megabytes of RAM, needs more. But for those that have non-PAE M systems, take heed, there's a Linux for you, John, in Dallas. And I had a Pentium M-based ThinkPad that I know is still running with, I think it's Mint 13 on it, that I gave to an elderly 91-year-old gentleman who's running Mint 13 quite happily, and it is running just fine. It has a gigabyte of RAM, and it runs a little bit slower than my HP, but for his purposes, it's fine. He runs a little bit slower than my HP himself, being 91 years old, but that's okay. So for those of you out there who have older laptops, Linux Mint is a perfect option for installing on there. Maybe not the fancy Cinnamon version, but maybe LMDE, Linux Mint Debian Edition, or maybe the XFCE version of Linux Mint as well. One of those would work just fine.
Okay. All right. Now we're going to go all the way over to Israel. And David in Israel wrote with a question about file sharing.
Right. David wrote, "Hi, Larry and Bill. I'm sure that a simple and elegant working solution to the following exists. And if you can help me, I think some of your other listeners might find it useful. Here's the situation. Computer phobic user, advanced in years, living alone, who just wants to be able to browse the web, email, and do online banking. He has two machines, a desktop and a laptop. They use the desktop in their home office, and the laptop is handy when at the kitchen table or in the family room reading or watching TV. The laptop connects to the internet via Wi-Fi out of the same modem and router serving the wired connection desktop." Okay, that's the situation. The problem, the user saves data all the time and wishes to access it from both machines. As access to support is infrequent, a client-server setup may be too complex. Better would be an automated file synchronization between the two systems. Could such a process requiring no maintenance or changes to the user's interface or procedures be set up? Now, an embarrassing question. Is it possible under Windows? How?
Wait, what just happened here?
He's asking a Windows support question
Linux
guy.
Wait, I'm sorry. You asked a Windows question. Oh.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We can't answer those on this show.
No.
Next email.
And next, the beep question. What kind of question was that? It was a Microsoft beep question.
All right, so David in Israel will help you out because you're my expat Canadian friend in Israel. We'll help you. We did make some recommendations. One of the things that we recommended that he do is consider using something like Dropbox or OneDrive or Google Drive. And Spider Oak is something that I don't know if they have something for Windows on Spider Oak or not, but it's certainly a popular way of doing this with Linux. And either any of the others will work on Linux as well, even Microsoft's OneDrive. David, after we made those recommendations, wrote back with another alternative that I thought would be interesting to our listeners here, which is the main purpose for bringing this email to us at all. And that is, David wrote, "I just saw this, not yet ready for prime time, and not appropriate for my present needs, but nonetheless of interest. Sync Thing." And we have a link both on the email as well as in our regular show notes page. But Sync Thing is something that is cross-platform. It is something that is similar to BitTorrent Sync in the way that it is implemented, and it allows you to replace things like Dropbox and BitTorrent Sync with an application that works cross-platform, and it gives you a standard web interface in a browser to do the setup. And so I was assuming that David might have been talking about his parents and that he was their tech support. And so I was thinking this might be suitable for him because he could set up TeamViewer or something to log into their computer from Linux and control their Windows computer and help them get this set up, maybe remote into the computer and get it set up for them. And since it's got a web interface, that would make it nice and easy. Unlike the cloud syncing tools, the sync thing is transferring files directly between the computers. Unlike Dropbox, which and most of the others that I talked about a moment ago, that synchronize your files from one computer up to a file repository in the cloud and then down to the other computer, this actually synchronizes between the two computers. The only thing you're using the internet for is to initiate that synchronization and to do the setup. Everything else, all the file transfer and so on, occurs between the two devices. And whether they're on the same network or across the internet from one another, it doesn't end up in a repository somewhere out in the cloud. And it works on Linux, Mac, and OS, Linux, Mac OS 10, and Windows. But it also works on FreeBSD and Solaris and lots of great support, including support for Android.
Cool.
So lots of different ways to sync your files across from point to point, from peer to peer, kind of.
Hmm.
So a different alternative.
All right.
And thanks, David, for bringing that to our attention. So not something that he wants to use, he said. So I think we'll probably have him continue to look at Dropbox or OneDrive or something for, mm-hmm. I'm assuming, his parents. So,
okay.
Yeah, thanks.
Sure. Okay, now we're going to go all the way from Israel to someplace in Europe.
Yeah.
Niles.
Undefined European country.
Niles in Europe suggests that
Nils.
Nils?
Or Nils.
You say yep. Nils? Okay, Nils. In Europe suggests that we put chapters into your podcast. That's interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
So he wrote, "Hello, Larry and Bill. I was wondering if you ever have thought about adding chapters to your audio files. We thought of adding bookmarks, but they don't stay between the pages. But anyway, mm-hmm. I saw that you already make lists with timestamps in the show notes. The step from there would be to add something like simple chapters that doesn't look that big of a task to do. Mm-hmm. The format of the chapters is just an XML file. There are more and more podcasts that use them, especially in Germany, and I am loving it. I love to listen to your podcast and would love to have chapters supported. I chatted to Tim Pritlove, the initiator of Podlove, and he gave me a link to this list, and we include that in the show notes as well. Keep up the good show. Best regards, Nils. And simple chapters, doing the research on it, we actually put the chapter support into our last podcast episode. And it's a simple addition to the RSS feed is what it is.
How does it work?
Well, it just adds some text to the RSS feed that in a supported podcatcher or MP3 listener player, as long as it supports that format, it reads that from the feed and it puts the chapters in there. So essentially it works, if you're familiar with the way that books play back in iTunes on a Mac, it will pick up from where you left off or allow you to jump to the next chapter in the book. This isn't going to let you pick up where you left off, but what it will do is it defines where the chapters are. So the developer of the podcast then defines where the chapters are. And for us, it's where we switch topics and allows in the supported player to be able to just click next chapter or go to chapter 4 or whatever you want. And you can name the chapters, much like you see in our timestamps on our website. We okay. list out where the subjects change, or in the case of reading through emails, we list the timestamp where each listener's email begins with a summary of what the email is, much like we have in the show notes here. And it works just like that. So not all podcast players support it, which is the reason for the second link in his email. And what that links to is a Google Doc that is a shared doc that gives you a list of popular Android and iOS and Windows Phone and Symbian OS and BlackBerry and, yes, Web OS clients, and whether or not they support the particular style of chapters that this software that he's suggesting we use provides. And it's in column, let's see, latest version, blah, 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 columns, where is it? Chapter support. I'm looking for it. It's in here somewhere. Yeah, there we go. Column R, the pirate column. Chapter R, yeah. So it lives, and you can see that most of the ones under Windows Phone do not support any sort of chaptering. Most of the ones under iOS do. Only one that I can see under Android does support this version of chaptering. And they also list in row 40 and below some of the desktop podcast listening clients and whether or not they support chapters as well. So we've begun putting chapter support into our feed. So if you have one of these that actually supports those chapters, or you want to find one, go to the show notes, click on the link, and you can find one from the list. And this Google Docs spreadsheet actually includes a link for each of them as well. So you can go right there and find the download link. It's pretty handy.
By the way, KY Engineer in the chat room has a question for her. He wants to know, he's asking Larry if he can sync two Raspberry Pis over the internet.
Sync two Raspberry Pis over the internet.
Charles? Larry, the appropriate answer for that one should be, it depends on your Linux skills, because Raspberry Pi, you can install various different versions of different Linux distros. I know there's some ARM architecture ones out there that are pretty robust, and if you can, once you get your Linux distro installed on it, you can set up any type of sync you want between the two boxes. Now, it really kind of depends on what kind of sync you're looking for, whether you're trying to do file syncs or whether you're trying to do, you know, whether you're just trying to SSH from one to the other. You definitely can do that one. But, you know, because Raspberry Pi itself allows you to install Linux as a core operating system, depending, you know, insert, you know, distro here, the answer, I think, simply put, is yes, depending on how much work you want to do.
Right. And that sync thing tool that we just read a couple of emails ago, that might be the solution there if it and it appears that it's supported on any version of Linux, including the perhaps Raspbian version that you have on your Raspberry Pi. So, sure. What Charles really said in brief is, you can do it, but it might be very difficult.
All right. Nothing's impossible.
I said very difficult.
Okay. Well,
very difficult. Very Pi. Okay. Very I'm sorry. Got it. Never mind. Okay.
Let's go to Rob, who needs help rebooting.
Let's go to Rob.
Rebooting after a fresh install upgrade. Okay.
Yeah. So we were talking about Mint 17 and their whole discussion about can you do an in-place upgrade? Well, Rob's asking that question from the flip side. Do I need to do a fresh install? Hello, Larry and Bill. Thanks for continuing to put out such an interesting and informative podcast. You know, these emailers, they never say those. I just insert those comments in there just to be a little
nice. Wait, figure it.
Yeah. Understand.
Okay.
Thank you for being awesome.
Yeah. Not only do I learn a lot from your topics on the podcast, but I have also picked up a lot of tips from the readers' questions. To that end, I have a question that I haven't been able to answer in the forums. It was, I was running Ubuntu 13.04 on an HP Pavilion D7 notebook, 64-bit, 8 gigabytes of RAM, and a 1 terabyte hard disk drive. For some reason, I decided that I needed to upgrade to 14.04 for the long-term support. get that for some reason. I needed to upgrade. Having learned my lessons in the past, I did a fresh backup. And yes, I do that on a regular basis. Good man, Rob. Using backup from the Ubuntu system settings. I then proceeded to do a full install. I learned where I messed. I think where I messed up was in letting the system take care of the formatting and the partitioning instead of clicking other and doing it for myself. When I had finished the install, I did a restore and told it to put everything back in the original folders. Remember that phrase?
Yep.
I told it to put everything back in the original folders. And at that point, I could see everything from my backup in their proper folders. I then rebooted. This is where it got interesting. The Ubuntu splash screen came up, and the following message appears. The disk drive for /boot/EFI is not ready yet or not present. Continue to wait or press S to skip mounting or M for manual recovery. Nothing happens if I wait. And if I press S, I get a second message like the first with /home instead of /boot/EFI. Pressing S again gets the same message, but with a huge UUID number. Now if I press M, the following message comes up. File system check checkout mount failed. A maintenance shell will now be started. Control D will terminate the shell and continue to after retrying file systems. Any further errors will be ignored. Terminating the shell starts a reboot and the same scenario repeats itself. I thought I deleted the partitions and create a /home and a swap partition and reinstall, but this only produced the same results. If either of y'all could point me towards a site or an article that might shed some light on this, I would be most grateful.
Don't they have Country Linux magazine?
I'm going to read that one through because I'm not sure I understand what he's saying. He had a partition issue, or he had a file system collapse on an install?
Okay. His next email reveals what the issue was because he found the solution on his own. However, if you kind of walk through this, he did a backup, which is a good thing. Then he installed the latest version of Ubuntu, a clean install, wiping everything off the hard drive. Then he took the backup and used the backup utility to restore everything to where it was before. Everything, including the system files. Right? That was the mistake. So Rob followed up. He found the solution. Larry, thanks for taking the time to give me an assist with the EFI problems. I had provided him some suggestions. I didn't pick up on that either first time. He found this on his own. While I was going through the Ask Ubuntu thread and trying to sort things out, I had an idea, which lately has been a rare occasion or a rare occurrence. While going through the steps I had taken, it dawned on me that in the process of restoring from backup, I had told the backup to restore the original folders, which was the default option, thinking that that could have caused a config error. I did another install after creating a new set of partitions, the root, home, and swap partitions. The install went fine, and I rebooted the system, and it came up correctly. I then did a restore, but I put all the files into one folder on my home partition, did a reboot, and all was well. Now, as I go to install a program, I grab the associated config files and move them to the correct location and keep going. Since I had backed up /etc/srv/var, along with the /home folder, I figured this had thrown the monkey wrench into the works. Thanks again for your assistance and for your help on the podcast, Rob. So Rob did it a little roundabout in that he took the entire backup, including the system files, and just dropped them all in his home partition. And really, all he had to do is take the backup of home, including all of the hidden files, and hidden folders and drop them into his home partition, and then that would have worked just fine, and he wouldn't have to move them one file at a time, as he's finding himself doing now.
Yeah, he had one version of Linux. He did a backup of that. He upgraded to the latest version. He had one version of Ubuntu, upgraded to the long-term support version, in which there are subtle system differences that really aren't subtle. If the config files aren't changed over, you lose.
right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're installing all of the utilities for the new operating system, including the new operating system, and then you take your backup and you overwrite the operating system with the old operating system and wonder why it doesn't boot. So that's kind of what he was doing without realizing it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad he found the solution to his problem.
Yes, as we are all.
Yes.
Okay.
So say we all.
So John wrote now in your G Plus community, Google Plus.
Yeah, Google Plus community, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been looking at some of the OS X Yosemite screenshots, and then I realized that after many years applying themes to GNOME and Unity to make it more like OS X, all I had to do was wait for 10, and it would end up looking like my Linux desktop instead. And if you click on the link to John's Google Plus post on our Google Plus community, you'll see a screenshot of his Ubuntu desktop looking an awful lot like Yosemite. Right? I don't think it'll look identical. Certainly the icons aren't the same, but it's got that same flat look. He's even got the Apple logo up there in the upper left-hand corner, if you look.
Terrible. Just terrible.
Oh, yeah. But that terrible.
Plagiarism. Plagiarism is what that is. Mm. Probably
Apple's
going to
freak out. Didn't Apple go around killing all of the Linux distros that came too close to looking like Apple?
Yeah. There was one that I remember they did that too, and now they just provide themes that let you change any version of Linux to look like.
Yeah,
OS X. So right now you can get a snow leopard or a leopard or lion theme. It's only a matter of time before you can get a Mavericks theme, and maybe even a Yosemite theme.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
So just wait, it'll happen.
Yosemite.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, and this is the last email. We've been a little shy on email this month, and this one happens to be the last one. So if you don't mind, we could go back and look at some of the the other 10 reasons, things you can do with Linux Mint 17, or we can change the topic altogether and talk about something else. But let's read Robert's last email here.
Okay.
Yeah, he gave us an update on his new Linux distro and his Linux adventures. He said, I am now running Manjaro, which is an Arch-based Linux distribution, and so far so good. It's a rolling release, and Charles is gone. So let me I don't see your picture. There you are. Okay. I was going to ask you to define a rolling release while I clear my throat.
Well, as far as I understand with a rolling release, it's not like version 2.6, 2.0 comes out. It's like version 2.0, 2.1, 2.2, 2.3, and it just continues to grow and build until they get to the final release point of it, is what I understand it to be.
Yeah, and when they reach the final release point, they stop supporting it because it's over. We're done. So, yeah, with Manjaro and with many rolling releases like it, you install it once and you never have to install again for any sort of upgrade because they send you the upgrades piecemeal. As they do the updates and the upgrades, they send them to you. So there isn't a delineation between release 1 and release 2 and release 3. They do provide new installation bases so that if you're starting in and they've been going for a year and a half, you don't have to start with a year and a half old version and get all the updates. But if you had installed it a year and a half ago, the version you're using today is the most recent version and you haven't had to do anything except the updates. So
okay. Well, we're at the bottom
we'll
of the hour.
This after the break.
Yeah, we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, on the Boost Radio Network, and the IRN Radio Network. It's our All Linux Show. We're doing emails. When we come back, we're going to have another news tip bulletin with Marty Winston on Microsoft Office 365. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Hello, this is Marty Winston for Computer America with a news tips bulletin review of Microsoft Office 365. That's the subscription offering of Office, meaning, among other things, annuity revenues for Microsoft. It seems like a good fit for people with more than one PC or Mac, especially if they're not uncomfortable using cloud services to share documents and files across those machines or with others. It also offers on-demand web apps that can work on computers that don't have Office installed. We agreed to review it when we learned of Office Mobile for Android, in hopes that when we're away, we could use our Android tablet for writing and so on, but no such luck. Office Mobile for Android works on handsets only, no tablets. To access, view, create, or edit Word, Excel, or PowerPoint files. Tasks that might have been palatable on a tablet prove tedious on a handset, but that's also true of third-party Office work-alikes. So bottom line, Office 365 provides alternatives that many users will find compelling. This is Marty Winston at the News Tips Bulletin for Computer America.
And thank you for that, Marty. Why am I looking at Craig's Computer America? Oh, there he is. Craig's asleep.
No, I'm
okay,
not.
So Craig
was
taking a nap during the break.
I ran over to grab a bite to eat.
Aw, you didn't bring us any cheeseburgers?
No.
Actually, you know what? Coming back, you know, after the break, it's weird, and I know my wife is listening, and I'm pretty sure she's going to tell my doctor about this. I am really craving a Big Mac.
Well,
we've boycotted McDonald's and everything else because our daughter did an experiment with a McDonald's French fry.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of disturbing. I mean, like if you've ever found an old McDonald's French fry in under the seat of your car, pulled it out and looked at it, and then paused for a minute and think, when was the last time I had McDonald's? And then realized that fry hasn't changed a bit. It's still the same texture, the same color. It's just like,
it's like
oh,
a Hostess
God.
It's like a Hostess Twinkie.
Right?
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, when she said that, and then we watched this little documentary thing, but when she did all of that, I was like, God, I can't eat McDonald's anymore. But The Big Mac is just so tasty.
So get one.
I don't want to regret.
Get two. They're small.
Nom, nom.
Oh,
hey, listen, we have a caller who has a question for us.
All right.
Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hi, caller. How can we help you?
Hello, Craig. Hello, Larry and Charles. This is Victor calling from San Francisco. I spoke to you some shows back where I was going to install Linux in a dual boot situation with Windows XP, and I installed Linux Mint Mate Edition 13, and it's fabulous. I love it. So now I want to go to 17, and when you go ahead and let it set itself up, it sees that you have a Windows install, and it will do its thing by, you know, dividing up the hard drive, except because now that I have Linux on it already, I have to force it to overwrite the partition that's already there, right?
Right.
Instead of letting it do it automatically.
Yes.
However, shall I erase the swap file, swap partition, and all of that stuff, make it one empty Linux where the Linux is going to go, 17, or will it just use the swap that's already there and you tell it to go over the old partition where the OS, Linux OS was.
Right. So, Charles, were you going to say something?
Well, I mean, I'm going to say that when upgrading in such a large one, you said you were on 1310, which was the 13, right?
I'm on 13 now, and I'm going to go to 17.
13 with the long-term support release.
Yeah, making such a large jump from one LTS to another LTS, you're best to just go ahead, back up all of your data, go ahead and format the full side of the hard drive that you had that you were running Linux on, that you were running Mint on, and let the Mint installer do its thing. I mean, it's gonna overwrite your swap naturally anyway, because it's just gonna make sure it's all there. But I wouldn't recommend trying to make your custom partitions yourself, because you're more likely to break your install.
Okay, so use the install CD and mark all the Linux stuff for deletion, and let it wipe it clean, ready, make it virgin, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay.
So your Windows side alone, and just erase everything that's on the Linux side, and have Linux Mint 17 install itself into that free space that you just created.
Okay. It's not going to try to shrink my Windows partition and go onto that part, you know, thinking that's a hard drive, right?
Well, yeah. If you choose install alongside of, you know, it gives you two options. One is install it alongside of your existing the Windows installation. Right now it's probably giving you, do you want to install it alongside of your Windows and your existing Linux, which would give you three installations, right? You'd have Linux Mint 13 and 17. But if you erase 13 first, the first option will be to install alongside of Windows. And it'll use that free space that's there, that you just erased. And if you, when you do the installation, when you start up the live CD or the live DVD, if you need a tool to do the erasing of Mint 13 after you've done your backup, look for gparted.
Yeah, I've played with that. It's great. It is a great partition.
Right in there. Completely eliminate that Mint 13 before you start the installation.
Yeah. Okay. And then, is there a way to save user settings so you don't have to reset everything up again when you get to fresh install?
Yes, absolutely. In your backup, what you want to do is all of your user settings will be there in your backup. And we're talking about user settings for applications, your preferences, your browser bookmarks, all of
those. No, I mean my OS settings, how I have my screen, how I have it set up to the way I like it.
So you're talking about your desktop and the themes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't come across a tool that backs up your theme and so on. Because there may be new theme options, I'm assuming that they're wanting you to set those up from the beginning again. So not that I'm aware of. Are you aware of any?
Well, I've done a lot of searches. Nothing comes up. So I don't think there is a way.
I mean,
you just have to do it again.
You really do it? If you know where all the config locations are for the different settings that you've got. But there's really no simple, quick way to back that all up. I mean, when you're going to run into the same issue that one of our emailers ran into, where if you back up all of your settings and all of your configs and all of this stuff, and then you try and restore those back when you install the 17, when you install 17, you're going to break your install again, because it's going to be trying to use, you know, 13 configs in the 17 install, and it's just not going to work right. So in the end, and this is the kind of the general rule of thumb that I use, ask yourself, is it going to take me longer to figure out how to back up these configs than it is to just redo them anyway?
I just figured make screenshots of all my settings windows and then just copy the information manually after I get it the fresh install done.
That's a good strategy. Yeah, that would work.
Yeah.
Remember to back up those screenshots.
Screenshot. Oh, I forgot to back it up.
Okay. Well, hopefully that that answers your question, and glad to hear from you. Oh, sorry, what was your first name again?
Victor.
Victor.
In San Francisco.
I remember you calling and said you were going to call us back. So, listen, I'm glad that you did that, and hope you keep listening to the Computer America show. You know, and
I do. I do. The Linux show is the best of them all.
Thank you.
All right. Well, listen, Victor, thank you again, and we'll see you next time, okay?
Okay. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. There you go. And again, 347-884-8881, 347-884-8881. We always keep an open phone line, regardless of what we're doing here. If any questions about Linux, we try to help you. And just like Victor. Now, we still want to finish up with Robert, or did
We didn't finish Robert's email. We got to line one, and that was it. So let's just review that. So Robert is running Manjaro Linux, an Arch-based Linux that is a rolling release, and we described rolling release and what that was and what that means. So in his email, he continues, yesterday I bought a Linux user, the Linux User magazine, and the Linux Format magazine. Mm-hmm. I did not get the Ubuntu User magazine because I have used almost every vanilla version they have made. Previously, I was using Point Linux, the Debian derivative. It has a really nice GNOME 2 look called Mate. I am going to meet up, hopefully, with a member of the Ventura County Linux Users Group and see about exchanging some ideas. Hope all is well. Last time I listened, y'all was coming back from vacation. We've got a lot of southerners here, countryers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Y'all was coming back from vacation, one of you, hoping the co-host feels better. Take care, everyone. Robert. So Robert's referring to the fact that Bill took a few days off. He wasn't feeling well. He was actually in the hospital for a couple of days. And I was on the one coming back from vacation. So thanks, Robert, for the email and for the update. I guess he bought Linux User and Linux Format magazine online, or maybe he bought a copy in a bookstore.
Either might have been like Micro Center or Barnes & Noble now.
Yeah, I was going to say, do they still have bookstores?
Barnes & Noble, yeah. Mm-hmm, sure.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so that's it for our emails. Like I said, you listeners out there, you got to send us some more emails. We're running out for the show here. Send them in. I'm going to have to dig up old ones and pretend
I had a post on the Google Plus community that, you know, never gets mentioned on the air, and I don't know why.
All right, well, let's go take a look. What have we got here?
I mean, I had one.
Okay, so tell me.
Well, the post that I had, so you remember on the last show that you were on, I was contemplating, you know, going Mac, remember?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, which should I get? What specs should I be running on my MacBook Pro that will comfortably run Linux? And I remember that you had it installed on – oh, see, that's a good one. You should like that
one. That's a good one. Yeah, I did like that one.
But, you know, it was one of those where I was asking, you know, you run it on, I think you've got a MacBook Air for work, right?
I do, but I do not have Linux installed on it, even in a virtual machine.
Ah, okay. Okay. And that's what I was trying to find. I was trying to find the appropriate specs. But since then, I've kind of answered my own question by just doing and putting VirtualBox on my MacBook Pro. And, you know, I've got Mint, I've got Ubuntu, and I've got Kali Linux, which we don't ever talk about.
Okay.
All installed in virtual machines. And I'm very, very happy with my Mac. I mean, the Pro, it's sad to say, but like I've been on this quest the last several years to find a powerful, thin traveler / desktop that, you know, I didn't have to worry about. And now I'm back to, you know, I got a dock for it, and I'm like, unplug one cable and take it, stick it in my bag, and now it's my travel laptop as well. So this machine has turned out to be almost perfect. And it's funny because I might be upgrading to the 16 gig of RAM and the 2.8 gigahertz one and waterfalling this pretty much brand new one to my wife. Because she does the same thing that I used to do, where we've got hardware at the office that we work on. You know, we spend all of our day sitting in front of it. And then we go home and we break out our bedside laptops and we try and get work done. And we're like, no matter what syncing option we're using, it's like, God, there's always something slightly missing. You know, so her having a laptop that she can just, you know, stick in a bag and roll out with, I think she's going to find pretty fun too. And I hear that the new Airs actually have pretty comparable specs as well.
Yeah, the new Airs are very well specced out.
Is yours an i7 or an i5?
Mine's an i7, but it is a company laptop and it's locked down and they don't want you to put virtual machines and stuff on it. So I respect that.
Locked down. I love it when people tell me.
Yeah.
Yes.
It brings out the hacker in him.
Exactly. That just means that I haven't found a way around. Oh, I mean, I respect the fact that they want it not installed with things that they don't want to install.
Hypothetically speaking,
Hypothetically
speaking, if they haven't disabled what's known as single user mode on your Mac. Hypothetically speaking, and not that I've done this in, you know, Mac stores around the country or anywhere.
Of course. Yeah.
You can drop it down into single user mode, which is basically the root user account. You can change the passwords for the admin account, or you can create a whole other root user account that gives you godlike access to the entire machine in just a matter of keystrokes. So if you hypothetically Googled, you know, how to enable, you know, single-user mode on the Mac.
Yeah, but you know, I understand
might
that
possibly be able to circumvent that.
I understand that in stores that really doesn't matter because when the end of the day, when you they turn them off and bring them back up, they're just like they were initially because
they
expect people to play with
it. They're in kiosk mode.
Yeah.
Right, they're in kiosk mode, but that sits on the standing admin user account. So the script that executes that isn't executing it in the Mac equivalent of the BIOS. It's executing on a script when you first log in. Wipe all cookies, clear all cache, clear all previous settings, fresh install, run demo. That's an Apple Magic or Active Script or whatever they're calling it. What I'm talking about actually it's not enabled by default. Like there's a diagnostic mode. Like if you ever take your Mac into the Apple store and you tell, and you know, you're getting things fixed, you notice that the geniuses don't ever ask you for your password. Yeah. They're always like, oh, we don't, you know, we're like, okay, well, we'll get it done, whatever. You set it down. Sometimes they say, you know, are there passwords on the system, so on and so forth, you know, but typically they don't because they know how to drop it into single user mode, or they've got the wherewithal to be able to circumvent your security mechanisms.
I've actually watched the Apple technician work on my iMac when I was having some problems with it, and it was just amazing when he get it, you know, he goes, brings it down to this low level thing and then hooks up with Apple computer, you know, and then it looks at the serial number, it does the whole I mean, it's just amazing the diagnostics of things that they can run to find out what's wrong with a computer. It's one of the benefits of having a closed system because it's a closed system, they know everything that's on there is going to, you know, what it's supposed to do. It makes it easier to diagnose and find problems and get them corrected more quickly.
It also means that their built-in back door is much easier to access.
And because they have known hardware, it makes open source software much easier to write for the known hardware. I was showing just a second ago, I'll put it back on the screen again, a website called Nightwise.com. This is a fellow podcaster from Belgium who supports he has his own computer support business, but he also has a podcast talking about, as he says here, hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. He does everything on whatever platform suits him. And I just did a search on Linux on Mac. He's done a number of audio podcast episodes, video episodes, as well as articles like you see here. On installing Linux on the Mac. So this one is installing Linux on an iMac, and there's the iMac. He's got another one down here on making
bootable.
He mentioned
Elementary OS. Wow.
Making bootable USB Linux disks on your Mac the easy way. What else have we got here? How to get remote Linux applications on your Mac Linux desktop with X forwarding.
Yep,
so he's got a lot of different things. Yep, and here we go for old timers. Linux on PPC Max.
PowerPC. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
right. There you go. So we've got a lot more related posts here as well.
You know what we should do now?
What's that?
We should sneak one night after tonight after Craig passes out.
Which would be about 10 minutes after the show.
Right.
But the thing,
we should SSH into his box and install Ubuntu with or install Linux with the Mac OS, see how long it takes him to go, what is this?
Yeah, why is it not working the same?
Everything will work for him. Except, well, no, he'd notice instantly because he'd be like, why is Microsoft Office not working?
Yeah,
it doesn't work. What is this?
What's wrong?
Well, you know, if you're using Office 365 on the web, it'll look exactly the same.
That's true.
See?
That's true.
Okay.
What did you think of that Marty's review of the Office 365, Charles?
I'm still not a fan of Office 365. I mean, it's... we're dealing with a company who's notorious for sucking up your data. I mean, Google, being the other bad person of it. But you took an open source cloud based solution and you brought it to everyone. So good for you on that one. But I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. You know, I've heard horror stories from users who are using 365 and are getting like ads based on something that they were typing or constructing later, or at least they thought that's what it was. I had one client who said, I was typing up a memorandum with something and, I opened up, God, I almost choked her for this one. But she was like, I opened Internet Explorer and, the first ad I got was from, something similar to what I was typing about. And I'm like, that's just too much out there. You know, imagine the things that you're creating in an Office document or a Word document that you just don't know who all is touching your data in that particular sense.
Hmm.
Right. And before the show, we were talking about another Microsoft product failing on my Linux Mint 17, Skype. Hmm. And for very similar reasons to the ones you just cited, Charles, I'm not sad that Skype doesn't work properly on my Linux anymore.
That gets me more interested because when the last update for Skype from Microsoft was to 1304, 12.04 maybe, multi-R.
Right.
And they stopped it right there. They were like, we're not doing this anymore. We're only going to develop for Windows and Mac because those are the primary ones. And we had to start doing all these crazy tweaks to do it. But there are alternatives. There's Pigeon that I think has a Skype connectivity in it, or you could just ditch Skype altogether and go with Google Hangouts, which is stable, is cross-platform, and has the same, has better audio quality. I mean, that was the first thing Craig, remarked on when we switched over to Hangouts. He was like, oh my God, it's full duplex.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and it's got cameras too. And he was like, what?
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Now I still do use Skype. I mean, there's no question about it. Once in a while, we'll have a guest who we'll either bring in through Skype, and of course, our connection to the Blog Talk Radio Network is via Skype. That's my
it still has its uses, I'm like you. I am not sad at all that it started to glitch. I mean, in 1310, it started glitchy,
right.
And we had to come up with different, tweaks to fix it. And that's what the community does, right?
But the one thing about Skype is that with the Blog Talk Radio is because even though it's half duplex, it doesn't matter because Blog Talk Radio is not making any sounds. It's just listening. So it basically it's half duplex and it doesn't matter. It's really a one-way communication, except when the British woman speaks. But even then, that's rare. I mean, during the broadcast, it really doesn't happen.
10 seconds.
Right.
Until launch.
Yeah, well, I can still use Skype. I just use it on my iPhone.
That's not the gold iPhone 5, is it?
No, it's not. It's a white one. It's company provided.
This is the gold.
Otherwise, I'd be using the gold
iPhone 5S.
Yeah.
would you be using it, Larry?
iPhone 5S.
Had your choice, which one would you
use? Oh, I'd be using probably my Samsung Android phone that I wasn't too happy with having to give up. It's sitting in it.
See, you and I are very similar, and I think this is just, par for the course on how the community operates. So this,
yeah.
Galaxy S4,
mm-hmm.
right? Then retired the Galaxy S4, and, well, didn't retire it, but switched from the S4 to, oh my God, it's a white iPhone 5S.
Yeah.
Looks like you have the same case.
Yeah, and then retired the iPhone 5S for, bam, the Nexus 5.
There you go.
How do you like that? Let me see. Can you turn the screen on? Let me see how close to how big the screen actually is. I can't tell when it's all black.
On my Nexus 5?
Yeah.
Bloop. Screen estate. Yeah. Let's just make a comparison because my iPhone is also awake over here. Yeah, about that tiny screen syndrome that you have over there on the iPhone world.
Tiny.
Don't get me wrong. My iPhone still has a strong place on my desk because I'm so waiting for Yosemite and the continuity connection. That, like, I use my hotspot in various different places, but for my Mac to be able to detect my phone, the tethering capability, and say, would you like to enable this without me having to pull my phone out of my pocket? That's awesome.
That's my biggest
complaint with having to tether different devices, you know. So that's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to that. And then the fact that I'll be able to make a phone call from my Mac that is actually on my phone, you know, it's using my phone to make the call, so I could probably just switch between the two. And now my mobile phone is now my desk phone, and I'm just like, yes. No, those are things
that's
that I've been
cool
looking
features.
For a while. But, you know, I mean, I use Google Voice now. So, you know, somebody calls, it comes up on my computer and it comes up on my phone. But there's no way for me to accept a call.
Answer the phone, yeah.
Yeah, and then I can answer it on the computer. You know, I can answer it with a headset and all that other stuff. But I can't transfer it to my phone if I have to get up from my desk. And I'm hoping that Apple has the design idea to do that.
Yeah,
that would solve so many problems.
I think didn't they say that already in the keynote that they said they was going to be able to do that?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you can. I know that you can accept it because it came into your phone, and it shares that. But I don't know whether you'll be able to be like, oh, transfer to phone, bam, and then walk away. And that's what I'm looking for.
Hey, Larry, listen, I guess we're out of time. And but it was a pleasure having you here on the show. You're going to stay with us to our after Hangouts program. But again, that's the Going Linux podcast. And again, you can go to our computer page at computeramerica.com. We have a link to it there under Friends of the Show. So thanks so much for being with us. All right. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.